So the idea of this study leave hatched a while ago while I was, actually when I first came to Kelowna, I was talking to some friends, and I sent out an email to a whole bunch of colleagues, and I said, can you recommend one or two of your favorite books, the books that have been most impactful to you in your ministry? And I got quite a few responses from people, but among them was this book, Becoming Human by Jean Vanier. And I had conversations with a friend in Edmonton, Craig Trainer, a friend and colleague, and I said with much bravado and brashness that I was going to send Jean Vanier a message and ask him to have a get-together so we could have a conversation. And he laughed. And I laughed. But about that, I thought about it later, and I thought, well, why not? Let's make it happen. The worst that can happen is that they ignore me, or maybe they say, no, you are a loser for asking. But they didn't. And the best that can happen is that they agreed to it. And they did. This is working now. So this is Jean Vanier, and I want to give you a bit of a background of Jean Vanier, because I've understood that it's surprising to me how many people don't know who he is. So let me give you a bit of background. He won the Templeton Prize in 2015, and this is awarded to a living person who, in the estimation of judges, has made an exceptional contribution to affirming life's spiritual dimension, whether through insight, discovery, or practical works. And that's from the Templeton Prize website. Now, let me just give you some names of previous winners and see if you recognize any of them. Mother Teresa, Billy Graham, Freeman Dyson, the Dalai Lama, Desmond Tutu, and Jean Vanier in 2015. And there are more, but I didn't recognize a lot of the names. So there's something challenging for us in this. We knew there was a chance for us to see Vanier, and we wanted to see him, but there was a chance that we would not see him in person because he actually had a heart attack in 2017, and that changed many things for him, and he is almost 90 years old. So it looked like we were going to see him after all, even after the heart attack, and then when the trip was finalized, some communications came in from the L'Arche community that made it sound like it was less likely that we would see him. And the three of us had a conversation about this, and the conclusion was that we would go on faith, believing that God had something for us, whether we see Jean Vanier or not. And I'll be honest, like, I really wanted a selfie with him. I thought that would be really cool to have a picture with Jean Vanier. Maybe I'm a bad person, but that's the truth. But God has something different in store for us. We didn't get to see him. And I will be honest, that was disappointing, but perhaps we learned more because we saw his work, and instead of talking about an idea, I really felt like we saw his work in action. And I really felt like he was saying something different. Very good. This works. I think we should just keep this system going. That he was saying something different than a lot of the other books I had read about community and church life and relationships that I have read. He wasn't writing a book about church growth, and it wasn't another missional church book. It wasn't another book on steps to becoming a prevailing person or a prevailing Christian. He had something different, something deeper, and I felt far more profound for us. And it was about being Jesus to the other, and about experiencing Jesus through the other. It was about transformation and love in such a tangible way. So I had a deep burden to learn more, because as far as I knew, no one had actually looked at his work, which is very powerful, and applied it to the life of church community. So what really captured me were a couple of things. One, he has this boundless optimism that just one person can make a huge difference. That we can make a difference by being love and acting out in love to our neighbor and to the people who are rejected and different. That just one person, each of us, can make a huge difference. I was also captured by his insistence that the love of Jesus and the gospel message means that we engage with the poor and the poor in spirit. And his observation that we become more human when we risk relationship with people who are other from us, who are different from us, because they expose our own otherness and weakness. So now I'm not going to know if it's actually working, because I'm actually clicking and it's happening. So anyway, these are my companions for the trip. The good-looking guy at the front is myself. And then the guy in the middle is Mark Buchanan. Mark Buchanan was a Canadian Baptist pastor in Duncan, and he's written a number of books, and now he's moved on to Ambrose University in Calgary. And the other guy is Craig Trainer, who is a colleague of mine at Zion Baptist Church in Edmonton, and it was a great mix of people to go with because we're all quite different. So that was a lot of fun. So the purpose, I really had a couple questions I wanted to ask. What role does community play in helping us to become more like Jesus? And how does how we see the other challenge and change us? This is what I was hoping to learn on a trip and what I want to share with you today. So I want to start here at Cambridge. You might think this is funny. This isn't a chronological slideshow here, but I want to start here for contrast to what we experienced at the L'Arche community in France. It was such an obvious contrast that we were actually shocked and stunned by this contrast. And this was actually an opportunity about traveling with Mark because he has these connections with different places that we got invited to Cambridge University and Tyndale House for coffee, and we got to meet the president of Tyndale House, just so we're clear. And we got to look at the library and see all the research. This is Cambridge in all of its splendor and glory. It is the pinnacle of intelligence, the pinnacle of learning, and a place of the elite. And we were walking around the city, and I saw signs like this all through the city. If you can't read it, it's inviting people to a casual discussion. Science meets faith. Xenotransplantation. When non-human animals enable human patients to live. So this is kind of what they talk about in Cambridge, is stuff like this. Just come and have a talk about this. And this next picture here, this is the president of Tyndale House with Mark. His name is Dr. Peter Williams. He has two masters and a PhD. And he supervises the academic life at Cambridge Tyndale House, but also supervises the research, which is impressive and substantial. This is what a typical workstation looks like at Tyndale House. You might think it looks a bit like my office, actually. We saw the original PhD dissertations of N.T. Wright and J.I. Packer on the shelves, and others that I didn't recognize, but there were a lot of them. And this is what they do here. They translate languages and work on discovering new verbs and words and nouns and accents. So one of the major things they're doing is working on this thing called the Codex Climaci Rescriptus. And they are using this technology, this really, really advanced technology, to erase layers. So they can erase scribal layers to get to the original text. Because a lot of these texts, what you have is through the ages, the scribes add things to them. And when you end up with the manuscript, it's really hard to tell which was original and which was not. So they have all these radio imaging technologies that are just completely cutting edge, and they cut through the surface, and they can see what was written below, and they can trace the evolution of the text, I guess we could say, and they discover a lot of new things. So they've done this and erased layers, and they've bragged about how they've discovered three new words. And I just couldn't contain my enthusiasm. But it is very important work, and it was fascinating and incredible. And we end up with something like this. This is the Tyndale House Greek New Testament, which is an updated version based on the latest manuscripts and texts. And here's some more pictures of splendor that I just thought we should look at as contrast. This is Notre Dame. There's another picture there. And you can see just the high exalted images of Christianity in its splendor and its transcendent nature. And then we go to L'Arche. And this is Jean Vanier with his friend, and this is the contrast. This is what we saw here that just kind of blew us away, going from one community to the other. We saw love, we saw acceptance, we saw humility. And we saw all those things that the Bible points to, but can actually stay in the head as an idea quite easily. And we often live in the world of ideas, and ideas, when it comes to community, can actually destroy a community. When you come to a community with an idea of what a community looks like, you can destroy what that community is emerging to be. And often we live with these ideas, and it destroys what God is doing. I want to move on a bit and talk about Jesus and the poor. This is one of the things that was really a prominent theme at the L'Arche community, that Jesus is present with the poor. This is a very foundational thought for Jean Vanier and the L'Arche communities. There is very strong thinking and theology and philosophy of Jean Vanier around this, and we saw this embodied in the L'Arche community. And it's that we experience and see Jesus in the poor. So let me expand that a bit, because I think you need to understand how we are using the word poor here, or poor in spirit. It's the other, it's the marginalized. It could be the physically poor that have no money. In the L'Arche context, it's the mentally disabled people who are categorized as poor, or poor in spirit. So he would say that Jesus is most present with the poor and the poor in spirit. And he would say that when we engage with the poor, somehow we see Jesus and experience Jesus in a way that will transform us. So I want to give you a little bit of history of L'Arche. This was an asylum when Jean Vanier first went to the town in the 60s. With 75 people living together in chaos. And when Jean Vanier visited this place, he came to this little town, actually. I asked, why Trolley? Why this little town? And he had a spiritual mentor there. So Jean Vanier, whose father was the Governor General of Canada, was actually a Navy, he was in the Canadian Navy, and when he was discharged from that, he went to Trolley, France, because his spiritual advisor was there. And this is what he saw. He saw this asylum. And his mentor was very much about experiencing Jesus through the poor and loving the poor if we are going to be Christians. So what he saw here was no love, no stimulation. He said the people were like animals together in this house, all these disabled people that were physically and mentally disabled. And he talked about his first nights there, that he went in and there were fist fights and just screaming, and it was just crazy. And his first nights, he just went to his room at night and locked the door because he couldn't do anything about it. It was so crazy. And then he had this idea that he would start with this. In 1964, he bought this house and invited three men with developmental disabilities to come live with him. And that's actually one of my pictures. Most of these pictures are mine, but there's some that aren't. That's actually the house as it looks today. He moved in with Raphael Simi and Philippe Sue. And the house actually had, he didn't know this, he just bought it without a job and without a plan, and without any training. He didn't really know what he was doing. And he moved into this house with these disabled people and tried to make a go of it. And, of course, there was no water. He didn't know where the lights were. And the first night was just horrendous. And but he named this little house L'Arche, which is Noah's Ark it just occurred to him that's what he would call this community as large, the Ark. And here's some more pictures of the beginning of La Ferme, which is the farm, because they have an area there that used to be a farm, and they transformed it into this retreat center. And that's some of the guys working there. I didn't take these last two pictures. Now, when we got there, we met a number of people, and it was really interesting because when we asked what they did, they all told us the same thing. They said, we're director of hospitality. And they all said we're directors of hospitality, and it was a bit puzzling until we understood how they practice radical hospitality. And what really struck us is that we were welcomed like we were the first guest that they ever had. It was very, very strange and humbling, actually, to be welcomed that way. So one of the things that we talked about was how the other can transform you. How when you encounter someone who is other, it actually challenges you. I'm going to talk more about that as we go through this. I think that theme is going to be through here, but I remember judging this first person that I met, and maybe because I was a bit disappointed we weren't meeting this intellectual giant. His name was Christoph. He's the tall, bald guy in the back peeking over, and he was just happy to sit with us. And listen, he didn't say much, and I didn't think he was a guy that we wanted to stay with or talk with too much. As a matter of fact, we thought that maybe he was one of the people that was, what did they call them there? So let me be clear. They call the residents. They call them the welcomers, and the people that are helping them are the assistants. So we thought he was a welcomer, not an assistant, if you understand what I'm saying. And we thought, how can we actually fulfill our objective about learning about community and having this experience and intelligent conversations with this guy? Well, it turns out he had been a monk and had been part of an order where he had been silent for 14 years. And we judged him and thought he was simple because he was content to listen and not speak much. So that was an experience of the other that confronted all three of us, because we found that we were in this place of judgment, and it exposed some things about us. So this is what La Ferme, my French got really good, looks like today. They invited us their first night into this private dining room like we were these honored guests, which I feel like we were, and they were incredibly attentive to us. And something interesting happened. I don't know if it was by design or by accident, but we observed that the French ate this way. They like to serve their meals in parts. Usually there would be a soup, and then a salad, and then a main, and then they'd have this bowl with fruits and yogurts for dessert. And for the main, they brought us these incredible-looking meat pies with this puffy pastry that was delicate and beautiful. And there were six of us, and they brought out six pies. But here's the thing, here's the problem. Three of them were meat pies, and three of them were vegetarian. And they offered them to us first, and there were three of us. And I knew the meat pies were going to go. And we had a bit of a dilemma. We had a suspicion that everyone wanted the meat. So what do you do? Do the three North Americans visiting, the brash North Americans, the loud North Americans, take the big meat pies for themselves and leave the rest for the others? What does community look like here? So they said, they saw our dilemma, and one of them said, you can cut them in half if you like. So Mark decided to do this. He took his knife and started cutting the first meat pie in half, and he totally flattened it and mangled it, and it destroyed that beautiful pastry. It just crushed it, and Craig did the same, and then it was my turn, and I just wanted a whole meat pie to myself, not a vegetarian one, but I took a half of each. And you know what we learned from that? You want community? You take half of the meat pie and risk crushing the crust. That's what you do in community. You take that kind of a risk. It's messy. And because community is like that, it takes sacrifices. And we thought that was a really good analogy for the way the life of community works. One of our hosts was from Germany. I guess he was an assistant, because I said that before. So he was an assistant, but he was one of our hosts. He was one of the directors of hospitality. And he was funny because, well, not because he was a German. I don't know if Germans are known to be funny people, but he was funny. But he had a hard time with some of the French ways. He liked things to be really precise and in order, as we understand Germans maybe do. And he observed that some things at L'Arche just weren't built properly. He said, the French know how to live, but sometimes they don't know about work, is what he said. Those are his words. And he said the French builders are like this. They use two when they should use three. And I just thought that was a pretty good image when we saw the showers draining the wrong way and stuff like that. But then he laughed in a very hearty, sincere way that showed that it didn't bug him at all, that it was just the way it was and he wasn't judging and that one way wasn't better than the other. And he told us that we each had our own room, which was awesome because the night before I had to share a queen bed with Craig Trainer under the same blankets. And it wasn't fun. Actually, I remember waking up in the night with him flinging my arm off of him. And I didn't want to repeat. Apparently that happened three times. Do I actually do that in my sleep, Cindy? I guess I do. Okay. And this guy, Thomas, said it had been planned that all three of us would be in the same room, but there had been a cancellation, and now that we would have our own rooms. And then he said this, coincidence is one of God's names. And I love that because he used it in such a way that displayed how God works things together for his good. That he's always interested in building community and relationships, and that's what he does. So this next is just a picture of the gate. You can see the sign there. It says La Ferme. And, of course, for those of you who are struggling with that, that means the farm in French. I'll translate that for you any day of the week. Here's another picture of the village. And one more. There we go. Now, that is one of the chapels that they have. So here's another guy that we met with. His name was Hugo. We actually couldn't really get his name because they called him Ugh, like Ugh. And, well, what are you saying? What is it? What is Ugh? And I said, do you mean Hugo? Yes, Hugo. Do you mean Hugh? Yes, Hugh. So I just decided it was Hugo, but we couldn't quite get to calling him Ugh. It didn't work for us. But he told us a lot of stories. He told us some stories about Jean Vanier walking through the streets of Paris and encountering people who were homeless. And he said that he never gave them money, but he always had conversations with them. And that when he left, they would be smiling. He also talked about one time when he himself, Ugh, was talking to a homeless person. And they got on so well that the guy actually pulled a drink out of his jacket and offered it to him. And he was like, do I drink this? Do I not drink this? And he drank it. He had a drink. And that was the start of a wonderful relationship between those two people. And one of the things that we learned that the people at Trolley said very easily was, je ne sais pas. I don't know. Which is quite interesting compared to Cambridge because they actually know everything over there. So this is Craig and Basil. He's 19 or 20 years old, and he is a Frenchman that moved to L'Arche to work with the severely mentally disabled people. And it was quite interesting that this young man would do this. Like, we're talking about people who really are difficult to communicate with and need a lot of care, and he's devoted his life to this. And one of the things that we were confronted by was with physical needs. Physical needs often expose what we try to hide, don't they? You know, there's drool, there's smells, there's dirtiness and messiness. And all of us in our culture, we seem to try to hide that part of our humanity. I'm not complaining, don't hear me wrong. But Jean Vanier's thinking is different here because we are to touch the body and to experience the other. And sometimes when we meet people like this, it exposes our own humanity. And we realize that actually we do all those things. We're all those things. We try to hide it, but we're still that messy human that these people are. And we get uncomfortable with that. And John Vanier says, we asked one of the people about touch because we noticed that they were very physical, because of course people with mental disabilities often want to be touched. They want to be engaged physically, and that raises all sorts of issues in a society like today because we're afraid to touch people. And he had this phrase that Jean Vanier says. He said that to touch the other is about tact and tenderness. And I thought that was a really good way to think about touch in our society. So this is one of the places that we went to that they wanted to show us. And this was an area for the severely mentally handicapped. And it was an area where they received therapy and got to interact with people and experience community. And this was something that they did with them. It looks a bit like we went to a nightclub, but I assure you it wasn't. They brought them into this room and put on a light show. And the young guy, Basil, would do this dance with ribbons and stuff and touch them with it and interact with them and try to bring them, make them more alive. And it was surprising just the tenderness in that. And it was interesting to watch that and what they did. Now, this next one is the parish chapel. And we went to a mass there, which was an interesting thing for us as Baptists. And there was a priest there who was, I liked him a lot, actually. He was very gentle. He had a very gentle way about him. And one of the things that we asked about was, when you're serving the Mass, what do you do with the mentally disabled people? And they said that you just have to move with it, and that our structures and religious traditions exist for people. Because often they would be blessing the Mass. You know how Catholics do it? They're so solemn about it. And you'd have these mentally disabled people come in and shake his hand right when he's in the middle of it or start talking to him and having conversation. And he'd just have to stop and understand that's what the community was about. And this is another man. I'm going to sound like a really bad person, but I'm going to continue with this theme because I think it maybe is going to expose something in all of us, I hope. This is another man that I judged because of my disappointment. When we first met him, he was very quiet and very reserved, and I thought he probably doesn't have much to say either. You know, this dealing with this disappointment of not seeing Jean Vanier. And this was his story, though. He came to L'Arche in the 60s. He's one of the first guys. He's now the director of L'Arche and Trolley. And he said, I came to see this community because I wanted an idea. I wanted a philosophy of Christianity. What I got was a person, which was the person of Jesus. And he said all sorts of things that just blew us away. Like, he was amazing. He talked about the disabled people, the mentally disabled, and I'm going to broaden that to the poor or poor in spirit. They expose us. So when you are interacting with someone who is other to you, it exposes you and brings your wounds to the surface. The woundedness of others brings your wounds to the surface and exposes what is inside of us. Found that very challenging. Because the foundational thought here is that we all have a wounded person inside of us. And when we welcome the wounded, we invite the wounds within us to be discovered. And that's a hard journey for a lot of us. And when they're discovered, they can come to the surface, and then they can heal. And he said that the principle of the gospel is that every and each person is sacred. Therefore, we need people in our lives to say and welcome the other and to say that we belong, no matter who they are. So this is Tony and myself and Mark, and he told us more about his journey. And as he came to L'Arche, he met this man that was disabled, and he told us he came from a background that was really heavy into the nightlife in Paris in the 60s. I don't know what that was like, but because it was the 60s, it was probably pretty wild. And he came to L'Arche to discover something, like he had an idea he wanted to discover, and he met this this guy. And he wanted to go back to Paris, and he said this in his broken French as he was about to leave. "Shoot, this one is my brother. I cannot leave." And I thought that was amazing about his friend Michel, who was a disabled man. And he wanted a brother to party with, but met a mentally disabled man. So he said this, and this is, you have to understand the language, but I want to say it in this language because it's how he said it. So please don't be offended. They use this word in France differently than we do. But he said, "A retarded man led me to faith when he wanted an intellectual answer." And he said, "God has a body. And he met a person when he wanted an idea." So the next thing I want to show you is this. This is my photo of Rembrandt. It's not perfect, but that actually is an original Rembrandt from the Louvre that we went and looked at the Rembrandt pictures. And my reflection is that we didn't meet Rembrandt, but met him through his work. We saw his brush strokes. We saw his self-portraits. We spent time contemplating what he was trying to say, what it meant, and tried to understand him. We saw the expression of the man like he was living now. And we reflected on that experience with Rembrandt, that we didn't meet Vanier, but we met him through his work. Didn't meet Vanier and experience him through an intellectual conversation, but what we saw and experienced was his vision. We wanted an idea, but we got people. We wanted intelligence and philosophy, but we got that philosophy in deed and action. And sometimes the thing that we think we need is actually what we want, not necessarily what we need. And I think that was the case with us on this trip. We really wanted to meet Vanier, but it wasn't what we needed. We got something different. I still would have liked that selfie, though. So one of the things that they said that I'm sitting with and digesting a lot of these things, but they had this idea about Christian community that it's about these three things in this journey. First of all, it's about relation. Then it's about transformation. And then it's about sign. And I still have to process this a bit because, like I say, the language was a barrier, but I really, really appreciated this, the consistency and simplicity of this, because the relation part is about the experience of the other, and the transformation part is about how we transform each other with that relationship. And then as we transform each other, as the body of Christ, we become a sign to the world of what a transformed people looks like. So when in a community, we must, they would say, invite the other, or we will not become human. And what they mean by become human is by become fully formed as a Christ disciple. That's the language they're using. And this is the message that we have, that we got for our churches. Buckle up. It's going to get messy. Maybe not what you wanted to hear, right? The life of community is messy. So I reflected on something about Cambridge, too. This man, Peter, that was this high-powered, double-master, PhD guy, I actually really did not enjoy my conversation with him because right away he started asking me these really tough questions. It was like this posturing. You know, when you get into a conversation and someone's firing at you and you fire back, and I was like, I think I'm kind of outgunned here, but I'm going to do my best. And it was kind of like that. And it made me feel insecure, like I had to prove something. And I wanted to display my cleverness. I wanted him to see how smart I was. But he was also the other to me. You know, a lot of people we meet can be the other. And he made me confront something inside as well, just like the mentally disabled could do or other people who were other. He made me confront my insecurities around that. So we experience the other in life in all sorts of different situations. And the question is, what are we going to do with that experience? Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. You know, in a community life, you discover your wounds, you discover your sin. If you really enter into community, you discover how maybe not to be so afraid of that wound, let it come to the surface so you can heal. And if you are closer to Jesus, then you're closer to your wounds. And you're not over your wounds, but you don't let them dominate you. You don't let your wounds dominate you, but you allow the other and Jesus to transform your wounds into something new and fresh. So here's the question. Community, is it working? You know, I think often as we strive for a life of community in the Christian church, at least this has been my experience, we actually usually assume it's not working when there's anger and tension and arguments and conflict. We say, this group isn't working. And actually, that's the opposite of what I've experienced here in the message that I think is for us today, is actually that when those things are there, that means it is working. That's the good news. Doesn't sound too good, does it? It's challenging. But when we embrace this difficulty, we can be transformed by it because it exposes our own wounds and brings them to the surface. And then that transforms us as a church. So my question is, are we ready for that as First Baptist Kelowna? Are we ready to experience those wounds coming to the surface and be confronted by them? Are we ready to stick with it and not run at the first sign of tension? Because that's been the tradition of Christians in North America, to run at the first sign of tension, which is actually the first sign of God doing something amazing. Are we ready? The nature of God as Trinity is community. Our God is a God of community. The Father, Son, and Holy Spirit live together in complete unity and intimacy like we can only imagine. And we have something of that in us because we're created in the image of God, a deep yearning that we need to fulfill and experience that closeness. And it's difficult for us. And I think the challenge is for us to be willing to stick with it. You know, another thing about community is that Jesus didn't write anything down. Do you notice that? I think that's, I don't know if that was a tactical error, but he didn't write anything down, but instead he left a community of believers. Community is so important to God that he left a community to carry his message. And I think the challenge for us to be more his church in Kelowna, to be more his disciples, is to enter into this community and follow through with it and let the wounds be exposed and let us be transformed by each other. Well, amen. And I'll go next year too. I'm just kidding. So thank you for sending me. And there's going to be, I'm sure, a lot more percolating out of me from this trip. It was very impactful. And I just call the team forward now. And hopefully as we are engaging in our visioning process, of which we want to give you an update very soon, you will see evidence of some of this coming out in our visioning process. And I think even as we've been moving forward, it has been working through this visioning process with us.